There are secrets out there, guys. Performance marketing secrets, and knowing just one or two of them can absolutely light up your funnels. Let's go. This is the Revenue Driven CMO. I'm your host, Chris McKinnick. Join me as I uncover the secrets of the world's most elite CMOs marketing leaders. The Revenue Driven CMO is sponsored by Web Mechanics, the AI-driven performance agency that makes you smarter. Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Revenue Driven CMO. We have a very special guest today that I'm really excited to have on the show, Pam Poligian. Pam is the Chief Marketing Officer at Navy Federal Credit Union. And as the CMO, she leads all initiatives focused on brand and corporate narratives, corporate social responsibility, sustainability, digital, and of course, marketing communications. And she acts as a conduit between the organization, current and prospective members, keeping a pulse on the needs of both for their mutual benefit and success. Pam is passionate about accurately capturing what the credit union stands for, going beyond building awareness to generating loyalty and trust from active duty veterans and their families. Before becoming CMO at Navy Federal Credit Union, she served as the Senior Vice President of Marketing and Communications, overseeing the advancement of Navy Federal's brand story of unsurpassed member service. To that end, she was instrumental in the development and launch of Navy Federal's brand platform and tagline, "Our members are the mission." That's an awesome tagline. She has over 25 years of account management experience, including positions with DDB, Ingalls, Quinn & Johnson, and BBDO, where she executed campaigns for brands like Wachovia, Energizer, Safeway, Nabisco, Ocean Spray, Black & Decker, and many others. And she is also a founding member of the DC chapter of Chief, which, as many of you know, is an organization devoted to connecting and empowering women in leadership. Pam, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Chris. It's great to be here.
I know. I'm feeling great. I'm super duper excited to learn some things from you. I know that you have a wealth of experience, but you know how we roll. We like to lead with the value. And so for everybody listening, what is one of your biggest secrets to success in marketing?
Well, I'll start there, but I also will say it's not really a secret. And I also don't think you're into secret keeping when your title is the revenue-driven CMO. And I loved that. I accepted this invite because I really think all CMOs really have to be revenue-driven. We can talk 100%. About brand metrics till the cows come home, but until that can turn into revenue, it's a missing gap. So congratulations to you for giving the focus right up front, revenue driving roles.
Yeah.
For me, 100%. Though, when I loved this question of yours, it was a great one. And this is not a secret, because I will even tell you, it's a quote from RGB. And I use this because I feel like it really does a lot of different things. You probably can even see I have this taped up on my computer monitor as a reminder for me to remember every day. And it really says, fight for the things that you care about, but do it in a way that will lead others to join you. And the reason that's so meaningful is fight for the things you care about shows that you're going to have focus. You can't do it all. Focus on the things that matter and the things that really, from a strategic perspective, drive the preference for your brand and the revenue that you need. Fight acknowledges it's not going to be easy. You've got to be able to focus on those initiatives and then fight and defend for the funding for them and for the activation of them. You know, be able to be willing to be that advocate for those things.
Yeah.
You care about means, like I said, make it meaningful. And to me, for marketing, and I think everybody that's been in marketing really knows that this is a team sport. So that last part of the quote that says, do it in a way that will lead others to join you, acknowledges very few things can we do by ourselves. But if we are doing the right job and are being the right kind of leaders, you're going to lead in a way that not only empowers your team, but inspires them to join you and come along focused on those things that matter in a way that they're willing to fight for it and make it happen.
Yeah, no, I love that. That's such a powerful quote. Hey, exclusive for listeners of this podcast, Web Mechanics will do 10 to 20 hours of work for you for free. Literally no sales calls, no BS. Just give them a problem and they will put a team to work for you for free for 10 to 20 hours, even if you're already a client. If you're struggling with demand gen, lead gen, SEO, SEM, Google Ads, LinkedIn Ads, conversion optimization, if you can't get Facebook or Meta Ads to work for the life of you, or you can't figure out attribution, Web Mechanics will take a good hard look at whatever problem you give them, whatever programs you put in front of them, and they will give you an objective, informed opinion, plus some advice from 10 to 20 hours of senior level attention. So I would suggest take them up on this offer. It's ridiculous. Go to revenuedrivencmo.com/free, fill out the 2-minute form, and you will not regret it. Literally zero downside, unlimited potential for growth. So do yourself a favor, revenuedrivencmo.com/free, no hyphens, no punctuations. You will be happy about that decision. And I love powerful quotes like that, where it's like, you know, it says one thing on the surface, but when you drill into it, it, you know, really has a deeper meaning. So I absolutely love that. I totally agree around focus. There's been, I think we've done entire episodes of around focus, especially in the CMO's role today, where like the CMO's role today is way larger and way more complex than it ever has been. Like, you know, there's responsibilities from brand and awareness and positioning all the way down to like, you know, performance marketing and, you know, even data, right? Like I imagine on a daily basis, you're probably connecting with so many different teams and so many different people. So I love that. And it's awesome that you have that posted on your monitor because, you know, it's, you got to remind yourself of certain things. So how do you use that like on a daily basis? Or can you think of an example recently where, you know, something was happening and you reminded yourself of that quote and it was helpful for you?
Well, we are a membership organization. We have 13.5 million members. That said, there are a lot of people that are eligible for membership that aren't members yet. And typically, those are members that are eligible via their parents or their siblings. Mm-hmm. So for us, we start thinking about when we look at resources and dollars, you know, there's only so much you can do, and we've got to focus the campaigns. There's always a question on how much do we focus on the core active duty, which truthfully is job one. We've got to get and keep active duty members. That's really who we were founded to serve. And they're critical to our health because they're that core. That said, our growth comes a lot from that veteran channel. So we've got to be able to balance the resources to make sure that we're talking to that audience. Guess what? That audience has different needs. They're not thinking about the same things that active duty are. They don't have the same lifestyles. They don't have the same needs. They're often not on base anymore. So us pivoting and shifting, so that means it really sometimes requires a different campaign, different metrics, different drivers that are going to convince them to join. So we've got to, you know, you've got to be able to do both of those, but also have them in a way that's joined. Mm-hmm. And, you know, most of our members join because they want something, they want a product. So where then do you put the product advertising in, and how does that work, and how do they complement each other, and how does that all link? So typically, like everybody that is fighting with this, if you think about the broad scale, broad reach vehicles, you've often got a limited time. You've got to tell the story fast and sweet. You know, for us, it's being, we have a small share of voice in a very cluttered category. We've got to make sure that the work is very integrated, builds off each other. Otherwise, it doesn't all get attributed to us. And we've got to do it in a way that catches somebody's attention, where they really do want to learn more and figure out what it's like to be part of our, what we have to offer.
Yeah.
We often say people join for us for the value that they get from the products, but they stay because of our values, meaning the things we value are the things they value. And as you know, too, that's also harder to tell that story in a succinct passion.
Yeah.
But we try to do that in a meaningful way. We do some storytelling that people then hopefully can see themselves in that. So we make decisions every day on how do we balance what we're trying to do, as well as with the data that we're trying to do it with. We have a lot of data. So does everybody. Data can be like the big wave that rushes you, or it can be the wave that powers you forward. And we're trying to figure out which wave do we ride, and which data points really are meaningful to make a difference in our campaigns and our efforts.
Yeah, that's an excellent example. It's like, and if I might summarize that, so there's different audiences, limited resources, and so you need to fight for what, fight for the things you care about, right? So in that specific instance, what was it that you're fighting for? Are you fighting for like, hey, let's prioritize the active military members? Or are you fighting for like, guys, we need a succinct message that can apply and, you know, be relevant and stand out for both?
And Chris, for us, it's both. It's that platform, because when you mentioned up front our tagline, our members are the mission. That is our tagline, but it also represents our business strategy. To be a member is meaningful here. So for us, that's a platform that's broad enough to support all of our members, regardless of their needs, if they're a veteran, a family member, or active duty. But then pulling out the specifics for each one of those pillars and be able to talk about that. And then from our resource allocation, make sure that we're allocating the resources based on the potential and the priorities. So there's lots of juggling that's happening and lots of optimization. You know, what we think might work doesn't always work. But then how do you in real time apply those learnings, pivot, and go back at it?
Yeah. Now, let's talk about the second part of that statement about doing it in a way that will lead others to join you. I personally could use some help with this and with focus, right? Because to me, there's a lot of things that I care deeply about, you know, and sometimes I find myself like wishing that I could get others inspired and rallied around the idea, but I don't necessarily have a very good technique or a framework to do that with. And so, you know, as the CEO, sometimes I find myself like, you know, for lack of a better term, just kind of shoving things down people's throat, because it's like, guys, like, I really believe in this. This is my vision. Like, we got to get this done. What's a better technique to, like, you know, win friends and influence people, so to speak, to, you know, kind of be bought into the ideas yourself themselves and to be inspired even?
Well, it varies based on the person. And we all know there are left brain thinkers and right brain thinkers. And who are you thinking? Who are you talking to? And who are you convincing? I will tell you here, I have found it's most effective. It starts with listening. Mm-hmm. And I'm doing a little bit of diagnostics as I'm listening. What questions are they asking? How do they make decisions? Is this a rational decision? Is this an emotional decision? Is this a decision that's really driven by the numbers? When I meet with our CFO and I really partner with him, and I tell him, I want you to treat marketing as an investment. That means an investment with an expected return. And he'll often say, well, you're on the expenditure part of the balance sheet. I said, I am, but here's what this means. I'm an investment, not an expenditure, because there is a return from what we do. And we measure it in these ways. We measure it in membership growth. We measure it in terms of preference. We measure it on our member side relative to engagement. But from a North Star there, from our members, how much they trust us and what do they? So we've got some softer metrics in it, as well as like that are more attitudes. What do they think? As well as what do they do? As Chris and I were talking earlier, I was saying that I wore my sweatshirt today because I forgot we were going to be on camera. But I'm also going to say I wore that kind of a nod to my friends on the Silicon Coast, that Silicon Valley, that always are rocking the hoodies. They get it. It's about data. It's about taking those data signals and then adjusting your particular plea or effort that you're trying to lead somebody in a way that's meaningful to them. And the hard part about it is it varies based on who they are, what they do, what their role is, their perceptions going in, their metrics that matter may be different than the metrics you have. and trying to understand all that so that you can make the best case and really win their head, heart, and funding.
Yeah, no, I totally hear you. And that's 100% on point. It's definitely an art and a science associated with that. And it's tough. I mean, it's really challenging, especially with, you know, different people. There's no two that are exactly alike. Even if there's, you know, a group of left brain and a group of right brain generally, you know, everybody's got their own buttons. So it's certainly not easy. Cool. Well, that has been really useful. I'm definitely going to print that out myself and keep it somewhere nearby. Fight for the things you care about, but do it in a way that will lead others to join you. The fighting indicates that, hey, this isn't going to be easy. It will be a fight. For the things you care about, you might say, hey, for the few things, you know, or the short list of things that you care about. And then, as importantly, probably as any of it, to do it in a way that is going to lead others to join you, to rally around that cause, because marketing is a team sport. 100%. I agree. So I love that, Pam. Thank you for sharing that. And you had mentioned some things around data. I'm like really interested. I'm sort of a hands-on, you know, I came up sort of doing the work. And so I'm always tempted to get into the nitty-gritty of data. We'll definitely jump in there, but let's talk a little bit more about Navy Federal. I know that you've been there actually now, I think 7 years. Congratulations on that. As you think back on your time there, like what's one of the things that you're most proud of, or like one of the biggest wins that you feel you and your team have been able to accomplish in that time?
Well, it's been an exciting time to be here, because only 10 years ago did we open our field of membership, because the credit unions have a field of membership in terms of who is eligible to join. Mm-hmm. And only 10 years ago did we open ours to all veterans. And that is a tremendous opportunity for us. So the charter was opened before I came here, but being part of that expansion. And truthfully, for me, the call here was really about being part of a culture and a team that really gets it, if you will. We talk about being, you'll hear this a lot in terms of different brands talking about the service and talking about being customer obsessed or customer centric or their CX experiences. That said, from my role in an agency, I'd hear other people talk about it, but it felt kind of like a mission, a goal, a vision versus an actual point of difference for them. And one thing that was different for me about Navy Federal is it is truly a point of difference. We have 22,000 employees, and I love, and I'm still excited to come to work every day with these team members who are really making a difference. And one of the things our management council does is every month we spend time with the front line, whether it's on phones with somebody for an hour doing a side-by-side, are spending time in one of our branches. And it allows you to not only hear it from a data report on what our members need, but see it live. Also see it in the context of what does that front line do? There have been some things that we've sat down and designed at headquarters, if you will. And then when we see it implemented in the field, we are like, wow, this is not at all what I envisioned. This is much harder for them to implement and see than I thought. And by seeing that, you're able to really do it. So for me, though, it really has been about our growth. It's been an exciting time to tell our story as a membership organization, which is unique, and tell those stories about value. It's always been part of what we do. Service has been part of it. But our values have always been true to us, but we've seen that being more important in the marketplace. So being part of that and telling that story has been really exciting. And I continue to get motivated every time I hear those various member stories and team member stories. We launched an employer branding effort too. We were just named by Fortune to their great places to work. We made their list, I think, for the 14th time.
Wow.
And things like that help you know that what you're doing as an employer brand really is, and it's one thing to put it out there. It's one thing to try to make sure that you're articulating what our team members tell you. But when you see the growth that we've had, and you see the recognition that our employees have for the place that they work, it's like, great, it's working. When you see the connection to sustainability and those type of issues, it's another affirmation that we're on the right track. And, you know, those part of our values of service is about doing the right thing for the members, which means when we're finishing up calls, well, our somebody's in front of them and in front of a branch, they'll ask, what else can I do for you? Not how fast can I get you off the phone or out of the lobby?
Yeah.
And so those things make my job easier because I'm not the one preaching on why that's important. Everybody gets it. Our thing is really, how do we package that? Because typically you don't see the experience and the service unless you are a member. So how do you represent that to a prospect in terms of what they get? So that's been an exciting part of it. And also the data angle, in that we've got so much data, and being able to be in this role at a time when we are using that data for good and empowering our frontline, as well as our marketing communications, to be as personalized as it possibly can for the member base is really exciting. So it's a great time to be here.
That's awesome. I mean, I can just tell by listening to you that, like, a lot of companies talk about being customer centric. A lot of companies talk about being mission driven, but I can tell that you guys are actually in it for the customer and actually driven by this purpose. So that's really awesome. So in terms of the data, I'm so interested to understand, like, what your data stack looks like, what your data strategy is in general. I know that, I mean, I've seen your guys' ads all over, right? I've seen you in magazines, I've seen you on TV, I've seen you online, on social, on search, everywhere. How do you approach measurement in general? Like, are you, I know you can't probably tell me everything, but how would you characterize, like, how you guys are doing it?
Well, I'll start at the big picture perspective. The big picture perspective is trying to do personalization at scale, and, or I should say, while taking into account your sensitivities on and making sure we're respecting your privacy.
Yeah.
I'll use an example that we learned the hard way. I will say, I was here during COVID, and we started an effort to send every member a birthday greeting. And I thought, everybody's happy, birthdays are good, they sure beat the alternative, which is not so good, so bring on the birthdays. So we started that effort, and some members we heard nothing from, and a handful of members we heard saying, I really wish you hadn't done this. It felt too close, it felt too personal. Other members, at first I thought they're just cranky about getting older. Then I realized it wasn't that. It was about how we use their data, in this case their birthday, to activate something for them. And we did some profiling of the members that we had heard from, and sure enough, they were in a similar segment of ours. And we found that their privacy concerns were high. And so immediately it was like, okay, cancel all the birthday greetings. But that said, to your point about what we're trying to do is this personalization of scale is figure out who is that over the line for, who is that a point of joy for, and then how do you customize what you're doing accordingly. At the same time, stay true to your foundation, which has got to be true across the broad membership base that you serve. So it definitely is a balance. We're still learning. We talk about do, learn, grow often, in the context of taking those learnings, apply them to what we're doing, and modify real time. Mm-hmm. And anybody that's in the service business, I think that's really imperative for their success. Mm-hmm. That said, I acknowledge it's hard because everybody's definition of good service or excellent service varies. Your definition of value could vary. For some people, it literally is the rate. And for others, it will include the time. How easy was it for them? How we were able to take away the stress? So a much bigger and broader definition. So I can't say that we succeed at it every day, but that's really part of what we're trying to do, is make sure that we know enough about the members that we're serving so that we know what's important to them and can adjust accordingly.
That makes a lot of sense. And that's a great example. I thought you were going to say that with the customized birthday greetings, that like something got, you know, wires got mixed somewhere along the way, and you were just like sending the horribly like wrong dates, like wrong messages to wrong people. But that's really interesting that some people might get, you know, offended or taken aback by something as simple as a birthday greeting. So how, not necessarily with the birthday thing in general, but if you can talk about the birthday thing in general, like what's the pitch to that CFO, right, who's focused on revenue even more so than the most revenue focused marketers? Like, how do you convince or sell that to the CFO that, like, hey, you know, let's do this birthday thing? Because it probably will, in reality, like add to or improve retention, or maybe even drive customer expansion in some cases, or even customer acquisition in some cases. But how do you like sell that and measure it?
Well, the good news is, working here, I don't have to ask for permission to do that because our leadership team overall, whether it's the CEO, COO, or the CFO, or any other C's along the way, is really knows that we're in the relationship business. So if every time I talk to you, I try to sell you something, guess what? You're going to stop calling me back. You're not going to have a relationship with me. I'm going to be that annoyance in your life versus that helpful advisor slash advocate for you. And really, when you think about a relationship, they typically are tied to, you know, when you think about people that inform you, they do things to engage and help you, not just sell you, but help you. Like, here's a tool that you can monitor your credit with. Here's a tool that you can use to figure out how much house you can afford. Here's a webinar that you can engage with to do this. So those are like very informational things. And the way we measure those is, did you engage? Not did you buy something? And then the last part of it is acquisition. So we try to make sure that when we're thinking about our member marketing, it's different on the prospect side because they don't know us yet, but on the member marketing, that we're really balancing our communications between those three objectives. Because if we're overly heavily handed on always trying to sell you something, we know that that's going to be a killer of the relationship. And we're in the relationship business.
100%. No, that makes perfect sense. Can you tell us a little bit about your tech stack, like top three platforms you can't live without, kind of thing?
I can give you the top two, and I will tell you we are a big Adobe user, there's a lot of both analytics, targeting capabilities, and customizations that come from that. We also are a Pega user. Pega helps us with a lot of personalization and a lot of what we call next best interaction. Notice I didn't say next best sell, next best interaction for you as a member, and has some very smart machine learning capabilities. And so I would put those two high on the list, for at least for
Got it.
us in terms of what we're doing.
Yeah, and when I'm looking this way, I'm still paying attention. I'm just looking at my other monitor. But Pega, is that Pega.com? Yep, I see it. Interesting. I've never heard of that one. But you find that it's pretty effective, Pega?
Yeah, both Pega and Adobe are good partners with us. They understand what we're doing. I think for Adobe, we're probably one of a bazillion customers, but there's a lot of great capabilities there. Like I said, both for analytics as well as for personalization. And both those are important to, as I mentioned, building a relationship.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's really awesome. And the value prop from what you're describing of Pega sounds like something that I've thought about quite a bit. Like when you think about email marketing and the future of email marketing with AI and things, there's got to be a day coming soon where it's like the marketers aren't even really writing or sending emails at all. It's basically like here's your database, you've got these various cohorts doing various things, and here's like your brand knowledge base, right? Some AI that's trained to speak like you and answer all the product questions and answer all the service questions. And then it's like the AI is basically deciding what to send, who to send it to, and when to send it. Like, that day has got to be coming at some point in email marketing in general. And I've thought about that quite a bit.
It probably is. I will tell you, I'm not going to speak for everybody in financial services, but for us, you know, we are not doing anything with AI that doesn't involve a human. So we still very much have that human interface because think about everything I told you about our brand. It's important. So that human really is, and our service really is our point of difference. So that said, we do know that AI, there's a lot of opportunities there. We've got a couple of pilots on various different initiatives. So we're figuring out what's the responsible way for us to use it in a way that's still true to us and our delivery. And, you know, machine learning does a lot of things that are not quite AI, that are just about efficiency. And there's a lot of machine learning baked into products like Pega that are really about that marketing automation. But we're not the one that's taking it to the fullest potential yet, because we want to make sure we're doing that in a responsible way and with that human always involved.
Yeah, of course. No, that makes sense. So not necessarily generative AI, but more AI around analysis, decisioning, things like that. That makes a ton of sense. Cool. Let's talk about a little bit, and I'm cognizant of time. I'm having so much fun, by the way. Like, I could sit here for 2 hours and do this. But I'd love to understand, like, when you think about your channel mix, like, what's really driving new acquisitions for you?
You know, for us, I always say our, you know, you've heard me talk about our members of the mission, and think about that. For you to believe that, you have to trust us. One of the things that's really hard is trust is earned, not given. So when we look at our broad prospecting, we've got to make sure, what are the things we're doing that allow us to introduce you to us as a brand and a company and a service provider in a way that both interest you, get your attention, and then starts to earn your trust. Broadcast for us still works really well. It is limited in the context of, you know, often it's 30-second units or online. It can be longer or shorter. Then you're driven by people's attention span, which can be shorter. Mm-hmm. So part of that is we are more of a more traditional marketer in the context of still using the full funnel. So we're using some of the broader reach metrics, but less, more for awareness and positioning of the brand and delivering messages against the key drivers that we know are important to our brand. And as I said, start to build that trust in the brand that you may or may not know, or you may know about us, but think that only Navy can join or only Marines can join and not know the full scope of service. Or think that it's only for active duty. So how do we, you know, message around that? So we do that a lot from the broadcasting side. And then on there, we're really what we call our media efforts planning about following the eyeballs. Like, people have, there's a lot of cord cutting. There's a lot of online viewing. There's a lot. So we try to show up in those places. Because of our field of membership, not everybody in America can join. Lots of people can. So we try to make sure that we're following veterans. That said, think about this, Chris. A veteran could be somebody that served 10, 15 years ago. They are off now in a life that's very different from their military service. So how do we reach them? They no longer live near the base. They're all over the U.S. And we end up finding ourselves in broader television. So things like football, hockey has worked really well for us. I think some of that's because the shared values of hockey players. I also think hockey is a fast game. So millennials are watching it, and they're willing to give us their attention, and it moves pretty quick. Resolution's over, three periods, chop, 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 done. But so we are in a lot of sports. Sports is still the number one appointment viewing, and that people watch that real time because they don't want to miss out being able to do the you know, talking with their friends about the game or the event. So we do that. We still are a radio advertiser. We feel like that really helps us with an effective frequency of the messages. Radio can be done when people are multitasking. So we try to make sure that the work stays fresh and stays relevant. And then our digital, we're able to measure each one of the components, which will be what it is, whether it's search, display, programmatic, et cetera, and then where it appears and how it works against whom. Because as you might imagine, there are some performance differences, not only by channel, but by also age, you know, or even just interest. If you're buying your first house, or if you're buying your first car or getting your first credit card, you have different questions and needs than if you're trying to open a checking account after you've moved.
Yeah. Now, that makes a ton of sense. I'll tell you a very quick, crazy story. So we've got this client, very performance driven. We were doing a lot of Facebook for them, like close to 7 figures a month on Facebook. They do a ton of TV as well. They're always interested in testing new channels. So we've tested, you know, Quora, Reddit, all these different things. None of them were really all that compelling, but YouTube they were very interested in, right? So we test YouTube, and we got it to a point where it was like more or less break even in terms of their desired cost per. And that happened quickly. So they were encouraged by that and they were like, okay, cool. Then somebody came up with the idea of, well, okay, would we have gotten those conversions anyway, right? Because we have all these other channels going. Is YouTube really like driving incremental conversions, or would we have gotten those anyway? So we undertook an incrementality study, and we ended up doing some media mix modeling and found that not only was it incremental, but it was incremental in a positive way, meaning that like what we were showing in platform, say it was 100, you know, new customers, in reality, based on this modeling, it was actually 200 new customers, right? So they were like, oh my goodness, like let's double down here, which they've done. And they're now going across and doing that to other channels. Do you guys, how do you guys like measure like, okay, you know, would we have gotten this anyway? Or would we have gotten, are we getting even more than what we're seeing?
Well, one of the things that we talk about and we really try to do it is where testing is always on. Meaning we're testing different things each time. We will sometimes hold out a set of the market. If it's email marketing, that's relatively easy to do. Just hold out a cell that you don't market to. Mm-hmm. If it's things that are, we'll do A, B, and I love with Adobe, sometimes they'll say, yes, it's A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, or K testing. Because you basically are limited relative to the number of versions you can put out. And so, you know, to your point, I do think AI is a big solution there. Eventually, when you are literally trying to create 40 versions of something to test simultaneously, because as you know, from a cost standpoint, you really can't afford to put that many materials out for a test, knowing right. that hopefully you're going to be able to kill 30 of those and only optimize against the 10 that work. So that's where I do think AI will be a big difference maker for all of us.
Yeah.
That said, you know, I think for us, it's just the an advice I'd give to anybody is a rigorous testing agenda is very helpful. And there's two things that have to happen for that. One, the technology and the strategic point of view on how do you really design the test in a way that's meaningful, you can read it, and you can act on the result. The other part I will say that is just as important is the environmental, emotional side of the test. Do you know what I mean by that?
Kind of. Not really. I'm interested, though.
It's the environment where it's safe to fail. Because if you only do the very rational side, you know, people will test very conservatively. And they'll test just versions of things that at the end, your results, you're not going to have a clear winner because everything's really just like sisters, cousins, brothers, like they're all so closely connected that it's hard to get any meaningful differences, which probably means you're not testing big enough. You're not as rigorous as you can be and should be.
Yeah.
That said, if you're going to push your team to do that, you've got to be able to say, we embrace failure. We try to celebrate that here too, a little bit like, did you learn something? Okay, then you didn't fail. Now, let's talk about what you learned, because how do we apply those learnings to other business units and to our brand campaigns? and to what we're doing in other things. But you've got to really make it, we talk about it as fail forward, meaning it's a failure, but I'm moving forward into the next initiative.
Yeah.
So both of those, it's the left brain, right brain, both have to show up in that you as a leader make it safe for that testing and learning environment. And then you also have the strategic capabilities to outline a test that's meaningful.
Wow, Pam, I'm even more impressed with you now than I was before. That is very insightful and very useful. I agree wholeheartedly on everything you said regarding testing. I find testing is oftentimes a blind spot for brands, like even large brands. It's one of, I think, probably the biggest levers that's untapped in most marketing equations, which is why I'm so impressed with what you guys are doing there. I think it's just hard, you know, for the reasons that you laid out. It's hard to decide what to do. Testing big enough is important to get results, but then also, like, some people want to test 45 different variations, but there's just not enough traffic, you know, to like get results quickly enough. So I think if it probably won't be 2024, but I bet you 2025 will be the year where like testing really comes front and center, and like brands start having like teams, you know, because it's so hard. Like, you need the audience targeting, you need the copy, the messaging, you need the actual, you know, ability to run the test in a way, you need analysts to, you know, to analyze. In a world like yours and like many other marketers, like, you can't just optimize to, hey, which one is getting the most new customers, because there's customer quality metrics, like which one has gotten better. So it's very difficult, I think, to do it well, which is probably why a lot of brands are like, oh yeah, like, we're testing, but not really investing that much in it. So kudos to you guys. Sounds like you're really kicking butt. I am curious, what are some of the big challenges you're facing, or what's kind of keeping you up at night?
Well, I appreciate your accolades, but I also will tell you, you're right. It's hard. And I always think about, did we do enough? Did we test this? Did we test that? And to your point about the emotional safety that people have to feel like they can fail. I bought these shirts for a team prize that I'll read. It says, the risk I took was calculated, but unfortunately I'm bad at math.
That's funny.
I thought it would be a funny, nice tribute to somebody for testing. And then others felt like it was mean-spirited. So we ended up like, so things like that happen, which you as a leader are trying to encourage things. And then it has the opposite impact. And that's definitely not what we want to do, because it definitely takes a village. So that's a tough one to embrace. I will say, I may not be right on this, but this is my personal opinion. I came from a CPG background. Early on, I worked on Nabisco, Raid, Ocean Spray. I did new products for Ocean Spray, all of this on the agency side. And I feel like there, the product that you're selling is always the same. When you're in a service brand, the product that you're selling changes with every interaction, because it's a relationship, and what people value in the relationship varies, which is what makes it really, really hard. And there are times that, we read the clues and maybe we don't get it right. And there's always those types of things. And I think the question just is, how do you keep going, but in a way that is respectful and meaningful? And it really is hard. And I do think we as a nation have a true trust deficit. So we've got to figure out how to do those ways that's respectful of our customers, and in our case, our members.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. That's incredibly challenging. Any other big challenges that you guys are up against right now?
You know, it goes back to the quote I started the conversation with, which was about when I talked about fight for the things you care about requires focus. And we are always struggling with focus. Like, how do you focus and prioritize on the real 3-4 meaningful things? I know sometimes, yeah, I'll find myself at the end of the week, like, here's my week. And it's like, well, what realistically can you do? What realistically can you have a meaningful impact? Where can you lead? Where is this on strategy? Where does this contribute to other efforts that are happening across the enterprise? So that's always a challenge, just in the context of making sure you are focusing on the things that really do matter.
A perpetual challenge. I've got a good one for you on that, and then we'll get to the lightning round. But there's a book called The One Big Thing. It's written by the guy who started Keller Williams Realty. I think it's Gary Keller. And similar to your quote, how your quote is deep. It's like, you know, it's one phrase, but actually when you read into it, it demands certain, it demands multiple things really to be able to answer it. But so it's called The One Big Thing, and it's all surrounded. Have you read it, by the way, or are you familiar?
No, I haven't, but I wrote it down to put on my list because sounds like something I would benefit from.
So the question is, very demanding question. What's the one big thing that you can do, and by doing so, or what's the one big thing you can do whereby doing so makes everything else either easier or unnecessary? Right? So here's how that's demanding. It's the one big thing. It's not the three big things. It's the that you can do, right? It has to be something within your sphere of control, such that by doing so makes everything else, not just some other things, makes everything else either easier or unnecessary, right? It's a very challenging question, but the book is great. It tells all types of stories around different brands and how they find their one big thing. But I often think about that. And with our clients, you know, we measure nearly everything, right? There's hundreds, of, if not thousands, of different metrics that we're looking at and measuring. But we have a metric we call the one big metric, also known as certified winning conditions, which is like, it asks the same question. If we mess everything else up, right? Like, what's that one big metric that we need to hit? And this client will still be happy with us, even if we mess everything else up. So we base, you know, our whole sort of customer health analysis framework on that. Everybody reports on that one big metric every Friday. And it's either red or green. Like, every client gets a status, which is either red or green. There's no yellow. And it's based essentially on whether we're hitting that one big metric. So I thought you would like
that. I love it. I love it. I'll have to think hard about what my one big thing is.
Yeah, right. All right, cool, Pam. So I want to get you out of here in time. Well, really, I would like to talk to you for the rest of the day. But in the interest of your time, I want to get you out of here. Do you want to do the lightning round?
Sure, let's go.
All right, it'll be quick. Question number one. If you were to start a side hustle, what side hustle would that be?
This is a hard question for me, and I have to tell you a story. My husband, same husband since college, so we've been married a long time, which I'm happy about. 30 years in investment banking, wasn't going to do that anymore, and said, what would your one thing be? And he knew. His was going to teach high school math. He did that. So I had a little bit of a, oh, what would mine be? And my list was everything from consulting gig to having a shop at the beach where we sold, we rent bikes and we sell candles and shells. So somewhere between those two, I'd have the best made for a side hustle.
Nice. I love that. All right. Maybe you could be a consultant for the little shops on the beach.
Yes, that would be good. That would be good. But then I may be frustrated because their data probably isn't the best. So we'll see.
Yeah, right. Question number two is, what are the top three books or authors or podcasts or, you know, other information sources that have made a big impact on you?
I am a big TED Talk person. I love those 20 minutes of, and even if it's not applicable, it's, you know, short, sweet, done, move on. They're done really well. So I'm a big TED Talk kind of groupie or advocate.
Any particular one? Oh, Simon Sinek. Yeah, Start With The Why.
Yes, does a great job. Start With The Why. Adam Grant, I think, does a great job in terms of prioritization. I've been on a big kick lately, as you might can tell from the things I've been talking about for experimentation and testing, and starting with the why, gotten into some innovation things and some behavioral education things. Behavioral economics shows what a really truly geek I am. I end up reading a lot of behavioral economics just because that fascinates me. There's a podcast for that was birthed from the Freakonomics author that I find myself going, oh, really? Okay, I see how that works. So all of those are part of my, but I have to admit, my reading is very fragmented. I find myself reading a lot of business things, and then I find myself every now and then just needing a good beach read, brainless thinking piece.
A lot of really smart people, I was surprised to learn, read fiction and like non-business oriented things. I think, well, I'm not big into it, but I've been told by others that it like helps to sort of expand your brain a little bit, and you find yourself kind of getting unexpected epiphanies that are business related sometimes. Like a mentor of mine is like a big sci-fi buff. He loves reading sci-fi, and he's like, I get my best business ideas from that. Like, really? But
I also
I
think it
believe
helps
it.
you think a little bit outside of your life. Even though they're all fiction, it's like, oh, what would happen if I was in that role? And so it's a nice escape. And that's how I think you do clear your mind and think about new things as well.
Yeah, love it. And then last question is, how do you avoid burnout, and how do you help your team also to avoid getting burned out?
Well, I'm a big believer in that the only way you can avoid burnout is you have to take time for yourself. What you do with your time for yourself is up to you, because what I do may not recharge you, but everybody finds their thing. I probably call myself a jogger versus a runner. But for me, like, running is my escape. I can get out and run. I don't listen to things when I run, because it's my free time to think, pray, cry, whatever you need to do, get it done out there and come back. I'm on a quest to run a marathon in each state. I have two states left, so I'll have to figure out what my next burnout is after I finish these last two states. But my advice to my team, though, is find your thing, whatever your thing is that recharges you. And make that the same priority that you do your meetings, your family, your children, your faith, your et cetera, and how you can prioritize that time for yourself, because it pays off probably at a 5-to-1 ratio. And if you don't do that, you really can't give to others unless you feel charged and ready for yourself. So that's got to be an important, but you got to find the thing that allows you to be recharged.
Yeah, I need to find my thing. I have no hobbies. It's all work and no play.
I wish I liked swimming. I have a aspiration for swimming. I can swim. Like, I own a bathing suit. I know how to swim, but it just isn't relaxing for me. And it's not the thing where I can clear my mind. But
Yeah, I wish I liked running. I can't do it though.
it's
I
also good when
tried.
you travel. You just need a pair of shoes. You don't have to have a tennis court or a pool or anything special. So that's why it's a good one to do. But it's okay to take the time off to do that thing that you need for yourself.
Love it. Well, Pam, I have thoroughly enjoyed this. I'm very, very impressed by you. You're a multifaceted marketer, and I can tell you're an exceptional leader. So thank you for coming on today. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for the invitation. It was fun. And thank you for your focus on helping us all learn from each other, and a community of learners that can learn and share from each other is always valuable.
Absolutely. And for everybody listening, if you learned anything here, or if you enjoyed it, please share this with a friend or a colleague, or drop us a 5-star rating wherever you get your pods. We definitely appreciate that. Pam, for folks that would like to learn more about you and or Navy Federal, where would you direct them?
Well, for Navy Federal, we are, as a nonprofit, we're at navyfederal.org. So that's always a good place to find out about us. And you can follow us on all the traditional social media platforms, whether that's Facebook, X. And then I am on Twitter at PG, sorry, X. I still haven't rebranded myself as at PG Pelagian. and also at LinkedIn at just Pam Pelagian. So you can follow me any of those places.
Cool. Yeah, and we'll include those in the show notes. Pam, stick around. We'll close out really quick. But for everybody else, that was another exciting episode of Revenue Driven CMO, and we will see you next time. And that's a wrap. Thanks for joining us here today. For show notes and other episodes, visit us at revenuedrivencmo.com. That's revenuedrivencmo.com. And hey, exclusive for listeners of this podcast, Web Mechanics will do 10 to 20 hours of work for you for free. Literally no sales calls, no BS. Just give them a problem and they will put a team to work for you for free for 10 to 20 hours. Even if you're already a client, if you're struggling with demand gen, lead gen, SEO, SEM, Google Ads, LinkedIn Ads, conversion optimization, if you can't get Facebook or Meta Ads to work for the life of you, or you can't figure out attribution, Web Mechanics will take a good hard look at whatever problem you give them, whatever programs you put in front of them, and they will give you an objective, informed opinion, plus some advice from 10 to 20 hours of senior level attention. And that's just because you're a listener of this podcast. So I would suggest take them up on this offer. It's ridiculous. Go to revenuedrivencmo.com/free, fill out the 2-minute form, and you will not regret it. Literally zero downside, unlimited potential for growth. So do yourself a favor, revenuedrivencmo.com/free, no hyphens, no punctuations. You will be happy about that decision.